Welcome to the Educate to Advocate podcast.
I'm April Tate, mom of two, founder of Drops of Hope Consulting, and a special education advocate.
I am Dr. Penny Stack, occupational therapist and founder of Dyslexia Center of Tulsa, where we provide team-based therapy to bring children to grade-level reading. Hey, let's share with everyone why we're doing the podcast.
I'm here to connect with listeners so we don't feel alone in the process of helping our children.
And I'm here to broaden awareness for providers that learning difficulties are not just about learning issues or needs, it's about a person's lived experience.
Let's get into today's topic. So in our state, there is a lot of transition surrounding dyslexia and how we meet the needs of children with dyslexia. RTI has always been a cornerstone of that process, so we wanted to spend some time talking today about RTI. So let's start with what is RTI? RTI stands for Response to Intervention, and it looks at reading, writing, and math skills and aims to identify struggling students and get them extra supports. It is just an approach to just helping, you know, some of those struggling kids. Interventions are, it's a multi-tiered system of support. So interventions are different depending on what tier those kids are falling in. The beginning tier, the first tier, tier one, is a whole classroom approach. The goal is to bring everyone to grade level expectations. They use universal screenings. And then if that is not successful, we move those kids to tier two. Tier two is small group intervention and instruction during an elective or an enrichment time, and that uses a different method than in tier one to try and help them in a different way. And then if that's not successful, they go to tier three, which is usually a small percentage of those that have, you know, not worked well with tier one or tier two, and they receive every day one-on-one or very small group instruction. And if they still don't make adequate progress at that point, the school will likely make a recommendation for an evaluation for special education services. The federal law says that when determining whether a student is eligible for special education services, they can use a process that determines if the child responds to scientific research-based intervention. The evidence support RTI is sparse and does not align with the science of reading.
So when I think about response to intervention in alignment with what therapy is, it aligns with, in my mind, with observation,
yes.
Right? You're just really seeing how the child works in his environment, how they're able to complete their task or not complete their task, what may be their struggles. And based on that observation, RTI is trying to come up with intervention to provide the child with more support or to meet their learning needs.
Right. And I think it's important to point out right now that this is all teacher based. This
right.
is from observation from a teacher standpoint who's watching a kid and says, this one is struggling. What do we need to do for this kid?
Right. So we're having teachers observe for learning differences, and many teachers receive absolutely no education about dyslexia while they're going to school to learn how to become a teacher. And special ed teachers learn very little. So you have teachers on the front line making observations without equipping them with all the information they need to make the real succinct observations to make sure the child goes down the right road.
Right.
So from a therapy standpoint, observation is a great tool. It's how we determine maybe what standardized assessments we will pull off a shelf. And every time we're treating, we're still observing. The struggle I'm running into with RTI from a scientific standpoint is, well, just that. It's not scientific. And some states may be using this to diagnose. Some states are using this for their only type of intervention. And it really misses a child's specific needs because you really don't know the why behind what they're doing because you're only treating what they're doing. You're not treating for, let me give you an example. So maybe they are really struggling with sounding out words. Well, why? Does somebody have difficulty with visual memory? Does somebody else have difficulty with being able to identify what letter goes with what sound? Knowing the why helps determine the treatment. So without the why, it's like you're throwing the whole kitchen sink at it and hoping it works.
Well, right. And the way that I understand this process to work, you start with, you know, a whole class, and then all of a sudden you're starting to see, you know, these three students are not keeping up with the grade level expectations. So then we're going to take them out and put them in a different environment and try something different with them. And then if it still doesn't work, we're going to put them in yet another environment and try again. And so it makes me think, why are we spending all of that time when we could just get straight to the point? What's
exactly
going on?
So think about the development of a child, and every day that it goes by without the proper intervention is failing that child. Essentially, that's what's happening. And so it does fail very bright children. It fails children who it hugely fails children who have dyslexia, because you're not looking at all of the reasons why they're having struggles. For example, when you look at a group need, it's not meeting the specific needs of a particular child, because it's you have people who have dyslexia who may fall just at that low average or below average, but they are not having enough difficulty to warrant testing or and they can even fail a grade. Like, they can do that, but they may not do poorly on a lot of things that would qualify them. And so this is where RTI misses a huge slew of children and doesn't address what they really need.
Right. And, you know, so I think about another group of children who, you know, are really bright. They might have a high IQ and they have all of this potential to be maybe reading at a much higher level in their current grade. But we, you know, we're looking at, are they reading at a grade level? And if they're reading at a grade level, great, check that box, we're in good shape. But we're missing this huge potential because they're making the grade. So,
but what happens when you have a child who's above average?
Right.
And they're meeting at grade level, but they're still reading 5 hours a night. Those children never get served. So here's the dilemma we're stuck with. As a parent, I'm just going back to when all this process started for my own child, and I relied 100% on the schools to be the expert. I didn't even know what to ask. So let's say my child went on RTI. I can guarantee you, back in the day, I would have just said, okay.
Right.
I would have not had any idea that I could even ask for more. I understand there needs to be standardized testing now, but where does this leave parents in terms of some type of an impasse when in their mind, they're thinking, well, don't we need to test? Or they may not even know they need to test. Or they may be thinking, oh, the school knows what to do. If they say this is what we're doing, then yes, this is what we're going to do. How do you get out of that vortex of all this time passing, this impasse we're at with the children of, yeah, we're doing observation, but we're not doing testing, but RTI doesn't push the date of the requirement of the school to test within a certain amount of time.
Correct.
How can a parent even advocate?
Well, so bottom line, you can request a special education evaluation at any point, whether they're in RTI, whether they're not. If there's something going on, you can sit down and write a letter or personally request, I prefer a letter, a special education evaluation be conducted. And we should know as advocates, as parents, that RTI can be used to gather information for those evaluations, but it cannot be used to extend the time frame for completing the evaluation. So, you know, every state, and it varies, their timeline varies. They have a specific amount of time where once they have consent to evaluate, those evaluations have to be completed in that time frame. RTI cannot be used to push that out. So at any given time, when you know that there's something more going on with your child and you don't feel like RTI is meeting your needs and you feel like there's more to explore with that kid, you can request a special education evaluation and they will go forward with the process. And that will kind of, I mean, they'll likely still be receiving RTI as an observation and just as, you know, a possible intervention. But while they're doing that, they'll still be evaluating and that process will still be taking place.
So you talked about the different tiers of RTI.
Yes.
And I'm curious, technically, how long could a child be on RTI? Is this something that could happen for a year or two or three? Like, it's interesting. I don't even know if there is a limit.
I don't know either.
Because when a parent identifies or a school identifies there's something going on with a child, and we know that there are laws put in place that once we request testing, there is a timeline in which it has to be executed where they have to do the test. But what if the parent doesn't even know to ask for testing? And this is a very economical way for school to address the disability without really addressing it.
Absolutely.
Right? And in the meantime, I could imagine this could go on for a couple of years.
Yes,
when
absolutely.
You think about the different tiers logistically, if they want to give the child time to see if there's been any impact and they move them through the different tiers, that could take
It could take some time. And it could. I have to imagine that they could get lost in a tier or two and hang out there for a while. I do know that RTI is much more common in elementary schools.
Yes.
But it can be used through high school. So it can be used the entire time. And I know that once, you know, once they hit tier three and they're still not successful, at that point, the school will likely request that the parents consent to further testing.
It's interesting because for some reason, and I don't know if I only see I'm sure I only see a certain side of it because of I'm not in the schools.
Sure.
But typically the children that I see, once they hit fourth grade, services aren't really provided at school for RTI or reading. They're assumed they are where they are and there's no potential for progress there. And they just do accommodations for the rest of the way through school. Rarely have I worked with high school or middle school children that are still getting intense reading intervention or even still learning how to read. Usually at that point, they're getting some type of accommodation or adapted work, mm-hmm. an adapted workload. So I just, you know, it just makes me start thinking how much we may be as a society, as a whole, this system may be failing children of a variety of different learning needs. Because if you are addressing a whole classroom or you're addressing a small group, how can you address that one particular child's needs? I could not imagine making a treatment plan based on a hunch.
Right.
Right. And I guess that's where this gets me. And I can't get my head wrapped around it. When I make a treatment plan, and this is where that medical model comes in, which is very different than the educational model. And I understand that the school cannot provide therapy in that sense, but there are so many things the school can do. And one of them, and I think that's what all the advocates are pushing for, is that evidence-based. Make your decision based on a fact and not a hunch is a great first step. But I really think that to serve these children well, you have to evaluate them and find out the why behind what they do. Because if I didn't do that, one, we wouldn't have outcomes. And I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be able to still be practicing. But this is acceptable methodology for the schools.
Right.
Which blows my mind.
Yes. But I mean, you're in a clinic and you're working with a small group of kids. You know, devil's advocate.
We work one-on-one.
Right. You're working one-on-one.
So, yeah.
But devil's advocate in a school setting, I mean, you've got one teacher who's got, you know, up to 30 kids in her classroom and she is trying to manage this. And, you know, I think on one hand, it's nice to have the ability to have the teacher's gut instinct that is really in tune to say, wait a minute, this child is not where the other kids are.
Because they see the child a full day
in
a very different environment than maybe a therapist would one-on-one. And there's a lot less stimulus going on with one-on-one. I totally agree with that.
Sure. I think that's great. I think we should always listen to what the teacher has to say. She has wonderful input. And she can often pick up on things that, you know, like me as a parent, I might not see, or like some of my other parents who aren't horribly involved in the academic life of their child, they have no idea about. And so it, you know, giving the teachers the ability to have that gut feeling, I feel like is a great first step. But once we identify those kids who are not progressing and are not catching up, then I think, yes, we need to probably do some heavier testing.
So we get there, we get the testing, and now we identify all these sticky wiki points, if you will. Mm-hmm. I don't even, you know, but we identify these areas that the children need more support or they need some type of intervention to be able to be successful.
Right.
And it, to me, when I look at testing, it looks like Swiss cheese. And what I mean by that, some things look great, then you see a hole over here and there's no rhyme or reason. It's just, it can look very scattered on testing. And at that point, the school's main role or main goal is to integrate them back into the classroom. And so that's when we go ahead and provide accommodations. But what about actually treating? I mean, they have the whole therapy team there.
Right.
Why couldn't speech and OT work on those executive cognitive functions and improve them?
Oh, yeah.
To give the child that foundational need so they can be successful in the classroom.
Well, I think ideally that's what everybody would really like. But then you come back to resources.
Well, I'm going to be the devil's advocate. Okay. It's actually brand numbers. And I know this wasn't what we kind of talked about for today. But several months ago, I actually did crunch the numbers.
Did you?
And I took a look at the dropout rate in Oklahoma between 7th and 12th grade. And it was a pretty significant number. And then I looked at how much money the schools would have received had they stayed in seat. We're talking millions of dollars the state would be getting if these children never dropped out of school. So I took that and I divided it by salary and benefit cost per therapist and came up with a significant amount of therapists that could be hired out of those funds that could provide those services early on in the schools. So there is already an embedded way for the schools to offset the cost without dipping into anyone's budget, meaning we're going to take from Peter to pay for Paul.
Right.
I mean, it would take, you know, from a business perspective, I get the cyclic effect that it would take years before that money would come through because you have to wait for a cycle to go through. And yes, there need to be initial funds right there. But what schools need to really understand and what adult entitlement programs really need to understand is if they would work together, one program would not tug on the other. For example, the dropouts we have from high school inevitably impact our entitlement programs, our prison systems, our yes. healthcare, and that money is just being spent millions of dollars. And if we could somehow pull our resources from the entitlement programs and these adult programs and help put them back into our school systems and provide them that support, it would be amazing statistically to see the decline
sure.
of the burden. And so that's, it's there, it's already there, but getting
take some creative out of the box thinking.
It would take a lot of agencies to say, hey, let's look at this differently, because a lot of these entitlement programs and a lot of these laws, we've spoke about the IDEA a while back, RTI, when we were looking at the research for this, you had even mentioned this goes way back to the 80s. Like
yes.
a lot of what we're doing now is based on old
information
or how society worked 20, 40, 50, 60, 80 years ago, but our society's changed.
Absolutely.
And our processes need to change with it.
I agree. Interesting. Well, that was a great discussion. I learned all kinds of good things today. I think we need to wrap up with some of our key points. So, you know, just some things that stood out to me is what is RTI and understanding the three-level approach, the multi-level approach to bringing kids to grade-level expectations. And just the interesting idea that, you know, education is evolving. Dyslexia is becoming more and more part of our school system, and just understanding how what we're doing now, can it not serve those children with dyslexia?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. When you look at the statistic of 1 in 5, we cannot not address it and Absolutely. Meet the needs of, I mean, this is 20% of our society. But one of the key points that stood out to me from this conversation was the fact that if your child is on RTI, it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think starting with observation is important no matter where you go. Even when you go visit a doctor before they do surgery on you, they're asking a lot of questions. They're observing. They're taking a look at whatever it is that you're having concerns about. You have to have a time frame of observation to make any type of decision of what tests to do or how to proceed. But I think there needs to be a finite amount of time
sure.
that needs to be defined at the beginning. What is that time? What's the plan after that? Not just more observation and more observation and more observation, but there needs to be some respect to the development of the child, meaning if we wait too long, this could be potentially a problem. And that's what I liked about what you had mentioned, April, was that at any time, the parent could say, you know what, it's time to move on to testing.
Yes.
We've got to get this done. And that you have the right to do that. Remember, parents, you're in the driver's seat.
Yes.
Your child is the client. If it wasn't for your child, there wouldn't be a team, right? And to just
Absolutely.
Always feel empowered and confident that you have a voice and can steer the ship and embrace the concept of RTI in terms of observation, but know intuitively when it's time to move your child forward.
Absolutely. And always listen to that instinct. Always listen to that
always,
instinct.
Always, always, always.
Well, we hope we leave you today feeling empowered to advocate. Thank you so much for making us a small part of your day.
We'd love to hear from you. What's on your mind? Email us with questions and comments at educatetoadvocate@gmail.com. Listen for your topic to be on a future podcast.
Connect with us on social media. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram. Subscribe and listen to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Alexa, and most podcast platforms.